Thank you for being here. Thank you to Trustee Bill Fix and Harriet Fix. Bill and Harriet are a part of the family that is responsible for the Johnston Science Center. Eric Johnston, Harriet's father, was a hero in Spokane and is the person after whom our science center is named. So thank you for being here. In our fall convocation, I told the Old Testament story of Esther. Eventually, Esther became a hero. But getting there was not exactly a straight shot. She was a refugee, a beauty queen. She was a queen, a risk taker, and a brilliant strategist. At one point, she was timid and scared. But she overcame her fear and became a hero to her people. Today, I'm going to tell the Old Testament story of Ruth. It's another great story about another great woman. She was faithful, strong, smart, and hardworking. She was a star, but not the only star of today's story. The co-star represents an aspect of Whitworth's identity that Dr. Soden has just described, and he also personifies a quality that distinguished Professors Reed, Hunt, and Oakland. Last month, you may have noticed that the Spokesman Review ran a story on Bo Jackson, maybe the greatest athlete who ever lived. Everyone who remembers Bo Jackson remembers Nike's Bo Knows campaign. Bo Knows football. Bo Knows baseball. Bo Knows shoes. The Bo in today's story is not Bo Jackson. It's Boaz. I don't think Az was his last name. But his friends did call him Bo. Trust me on this. This Bo also knew. But this Bo didn't know football or sandals. He knew something better. He knew redemption. In fact, his real nickname was not Bo. It was Kinsman Redeemer. Boaz knew redemption. Here's what happened. The story of Ruth took place in the 10th century B.C., not long before David became king, and not long after Whitworth hired Leonard Oakland. The story begins in Israel, suffering at the time from a hard famine. We read of a hungry family leaving their home in Bethlehem. Desperate times call for desperate measures, because Elimelech took his wife Naomi and their two sons to Moab. Only with great shame would an Israelite enter the land of its despised neighbor, Moab. But Moab had food, so that's where they went. Things did not go well for the Elimelechs in Moab. After the family arrived, the boys married Moabite women, Ruth and Orpah. But Elimelech died, and soon after, his two sons died. So here's Naomi, a Jewish widow in Moab, stranded with her two daughters-in-law. But she hears things have improved in Bethlehem, so she decides to go back. Of course, she knows that leaving Ruth and Orpah in Moab would be better for them and better for her. But let me read to you what happened. You are about to hear one of the most exquisite expressions of love and commitment ever recorded. With her two daughters-in-law, Naomi left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah, which is where Bethlehem was located. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me." At this they wept again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. Now, if I might, I'll read Ruth's response in the King James Version, because these are the exact words that were vowed when Bonnie and I got married 35 years ago. And Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and whither thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God. Where thou diest, I will die, and there I will be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me." So Naomi allowed Ruth to join her, and they returned to Bethlehem. By the time they arrive in Bethlehem, Naomi's bitterness had deepened. In fact, when her old neighbors greeted her, she said, "Don't call me Naomi, call me bitter, for the Lord has gone out against me." Naomi's husband and sons were dead, and all she had was this Moabite daughter, who in Bethlehem was way more of a liability than an asset. At least that's what Ruth thought, or Naomi thought. Okay, so now I'm going to speed up the story. Ruth and Naomi need food, so Ruth goes to a field that happens to be owned by Boaz, whom she finds out later is a close relative of Elimelech, her late father-in-law. She gets permission to pick up leftover grain after all the harvesters have worked the fields. When Boaz finds out that this poor woman is the widowed daughter-in-law of his relative, Elimelech, he encourages her to continue working in his fields, and he instructs the reapers to leave a little grain behind so she has something to pick up. So Ruth returns to Naomi with food and good news. Naomi is thrilled, and she gives Ruth a plan. Of course, the plan involves a bedroom scene where things could have gotten out of hand, but Boaz is an honorable man. In fact, he is so honorable that eventually he fulfills his obligation to redeem the property that had been left to Naomi by his relative, Elimelech. Along with that property came the duty to marry Ruth so that Elimelech's name would not be lost. Although Elimelech, that wouldn't be such a big loss if you... Anyway, so I might also point out that he seemed particularly eager about the marriage part of the deal. Ruth and Boaz get married, have a son named Obed, who had a son named Jesse, who had a son named David, who became King David. And that is the story of how Boaz became known as the kinsman redeemer, and how a non-Jewish Moabite widow became a direct ancestor of Jesus Christ. You have to read the book of Ruth. It's only 4 chapters, and I left out some fairly engaging parts. My message this morning is very simple. We can do the work of Boaz. We can bring redemption to excluded people. I had read through this short book several times before I realized that we hear Ruth speak to Boaz only 3 times. But in those 3 expressions, she reveals how Boaz gave her worth and ultimately redemption. She utters her first words when Boaz finds out that Ruth had requested to gather up grain after the rest had left the field. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to another field to glean, but stay here with my maids. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants have drawn." Then Ruth fell on her face and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me? I am a foreigner." Boaz noticed Ruth. Deep within all of us lies a primal need to be noticed. William James wrote these powerful words, "No more fiendish punishment could be devised than that one should be turned loose in society and remain absolutely unnoticed by all members thereof. If no one turned around when we entered, answered when we spoke, or minded what we did, a kind of rage and impotent despair would ere long well up in us, from which the cruelest of bodily tortures would be a relief." Who are the Moabites that we know? Who labors in exclusion, living on leftovers, desperately needing to be included? Desperately needing to to be noticed. Do you remember how great it made you feel when you were noticed, even though you were an outsider? Do you have any idea how many people have attended a church only once because they were not noticed? Do you have any idea of the devastation or joy you can bring through simply giving or withholding your notice? Our self-worth, even our self-existence, begins with being noticed. David Rankin tells of a conversation he overheard in a restaurant. A family of three was sitting at a table getting ready to order. The waitress turned to the parents first, who made their choices from the menu. Then she turned to their five-year-old. "And what will you have?" she asked cheerily. "I want a hot dog," the boy began. "No hot dog," his mother interrupted. "Just give him what we ordered." But the waitress ignored her. "Do you want ketchup on your hot dog?" she asked. "Ketchup," the boy replied with a happy smile. "Yes." "Coming up," the waitress promised, quickly running toward the kitchen to deliver the order. There was a moment of uncomfortable silence as they sat at the table. Then the youngster turned to his mother and said, "Mom, she thinks I'm real." 2 weeks after I came to work at Whitworth, I visited a pastor in Tacoma. Unfortunately, it was with very little fondness he recalled his days at Whitworth. He did, however, issue one credit to his college years, and I quote, "Leonard Oakland noticed me." And that began a life-giving relationship between a student and his professor. Ruth's second statement to Boaz came after he responded to her amazement that he had noticed her. Boaz says, "You are the one to be admired, Ruth. I heard about your faithfulness to Naomi. You became a foreigner in order to care for your mother-in-law." Don't you just love the grace of his response? He reroutes her admiration for him and gives it back to Ruth. Ruth replies, "You have comforted me and treated me with kindness, even though I am different from your maidservants." The second stage of Ruth's redemption came when she realized that even though she was different, Boaz included her in his community of servants. We are made to be in community. Before sin entered the Garden of Eden, there was only one recorded problem. There was only one thing that wasn't good. Adam was alone. That had to be bad. After the triune God said, "Let us make man in our image," it is no surprise that alone doesn't work. We are made to be in relationship. Sometimes we find ourselves alone, not a human in sight, and it's hard. But sometimes we find ourselves alone, surrounded by people. People who won't let us in, and that's even harder. And sometimes we are the ones who keep the door locked. Here are a few reasons we give for not including outsiders into our group. 1, they probably wouldn't like being in our group. 2, outsiders need their space. 3, they sin and we don't. 4, we sin and they don't. 5, we wouldn't have anything to talk about. And then there's that age-old 6th one, "I might have hepatitis, you never know." Ruth viewed the kindness she received from Boaz through the magnifying glass of an alien Moabite. She expected little and longed for much. By simply including Ruth, Boaz gave her worth. Finally, Ruth's third words to Boaz took place in the steamy part of the story. Confident in Naomi's strategy, Ruth waits until the evening party. She waits until Boaz has had a few drinks and retires. She then sneaks over to the far end of the threshing floor where Naomi assured her that Boaz would be asleep. Still following the plan, Ruth nestled down and turned back the covers from his feet in order to wake him. It works. He awakes and discovers a woman lying at his feet. He asks, "Who is it?" So Ruth, a Moabite, a widow, a guest, not even a true maidservant, replies to Boaz, "I am Ruth, your servant. Cover me, since you are my kinsman redeemer." This is the moment of truth for Boaz. He was in total control of that situation. When Ruth said, "Cover me," she was asking for a cultural symbol that would indicate Boaz intended to cover this very thin obligation he had to Elimelech. But "cover me" is also atonement language. It is redemption language. It's grace language. When Adam and Eve stood shamefully naked in the garden, and when the prodigal stood shamefully naked before his father, covering was what they longed for. So what would Boaz do? Would he redeem her? Would he banish her? Or would he use this moment for his own gratification? Well, I've already told you the end of the story. He chose redemption. Yesterday, I returned from Washington, D.C. Today, we celebrate Whitworth's history, and today, we recognize three retiring professors. The story of Boaz and Ruth draws together all three occasions. Boaz noticed, included, and redeemed Ruth. Right now in Washington, D.C., you can feel the pulse of the heroes who noticed, included, and paid the blood-soaked price of redemption. Without them, President Obama would live in a different house. Today, we also remember our Whitworth forebears. Without them noticing, including, and redeeming outsiders, our school would have a fundamentally different identity. And finally, without Leonard Oakland, Tammy Reed, Jim Hunt, and all these faculty members they represent, there would be far fewer stories of students who were noticed, included, and redeemed when they walked the halls of Whitworth. I'm not sure Whitworth has ever retired in 1 year three professors with a greater Boaz quotient. So I would like to close this convocation with two thank yous. First, thanks to all of you students, faculty, and staff who have noticed, included, and given worth to any student lost in the anguish of being excluded. You have made Whitworth, Whitworth. And second, I give thanks to Christ, our great Redeemer, who noticed Zacchaeus, included Zacchaeus, and redeemed Zacchaeus. To Christ, who noticed and redeemed the woman who merely touched his garment. To Christ, who notices you and me, and includes us through the power of his death and resurrection. To Christ, who covers and redeems us with his own righteousness. Thanks be to Christ, our great Redeemer. Amen.